Welcome to the Sitakawa Eugene February 3rd program, Eugene Parks and Recreation, the present and future of our greatest natural asset. This is the 17th program in a current programming year, 2016-2017 programming year. My name is Juan Carlos Valle, City Club President. The City Club brings together civic-minded people to make Eugene a better place to live, work, and play. We are a member-supported nonprofit. Our members have a direct influence on policy and policymaker. To do that, you must become a member. Do that by going to www.cityclubofeugene.org. There's many volunteer opportunities if you're looking for some. If you have any ideas about how we can operate better, let us know. Support for the City Club of Eugene comes from our members, but also from sponsors, including Evans, Elder, Brown, and Subert. Eugene Commercial Real Estate Company, dedicated to selling, leasing, and developing office, retail, investment, and industrial properties, and assisting clients in completing 1031 tax-deferred exchanges. Eugene Legal, providing convenient, affordable legal services to people in the Eugene Springfield area. And to 91.9 KRVM, a public radio station owned by Eugene School District 4J since 1947, that provides quality community radio educating areas, high school students, and volunteers in the art and techniques of broadcasting. A special thank you to our professional staff administrator, Mark Howardy, whom has been doing an outstanding job for us and providing support to our leadership. Mark, in the back, want to say thank you. And please join me in a round of applause to Mark. We definitely could not do everything we do without the support of our administrator. And as many of you know, we are looking at converting that into an executive director. So we are definitely going in that direction with your support. Today's program is coordinated by Sandy Erickson. Thank you, Sandy, for all your work on this great program. Great cities have great parks and recreation systems. Eugene is home to some of the most impressive and treasured parks in Oregon. The benefit to citizens includes the opportunity for a healthy, active lifestyle in a socially connected community with a thriving economy and diverse and robust natural ecosystem. During a two-year local community engagement process, the City of Eugene Parks and Recreation Department has assisted in shaping a vision that builds on Eugene's rich parks and recreation legacy. It promises a robust, exciting, and equitable system for future generations. Today we will learn more about the benefits of parks and recreation and what is being planned for the future. Climate change, the political ties and budgetary realities make it critically important right now that each of us engage to actively protect our parks. Our panelists are experts in the field with a collective deep commitment to our natural world and to all of us as we move through phases of our lives here in Eugene in the areas. Speakers in our panel include Craig Carnegie, City of Eugene Parks and Open Space Director, Sandy Schaefer, City of Eugene Recreation Services Manager, and Carolyn Burke, City of Eugene Parks and Open Space Planning Manager. City of Eugene Recreation Services Director Craig Smith, he's also here today and will be available to assist us with answering questions should that opportunity arises. And today, we're also pleased to welcome Brad Van Apple, Director of the Mount Pisgah Arboretum, who has accepted kindly to be our first questionnaire.
Thank you for having us here. It's an honor to talk with you today on behalf of our Parks and Recreation Divisions, both the professionals who work hard to deliver quality parks and recreation services to this community, and the people who use and enjoy those services. We're here to talk about the real Parks and Recreation, not the comedy series that was once on TV. I'm not Leslie Knope, so hopefully everyone came here for the right talk, and I don't see anybody getting up and leaving, so I guess that's a good start. The real Parks and Recreation we're here to talk about provides you with tangible benefits and has positive impacts on this community every day. I'm going to start by briefly talking about these benefits and impacts, as well as how your Parks and Recreation divisions work together to help our community solve some of its biggest challenges. Challenges such as addressing the homeless crisis, preparing for climate change, supporting our local economy, and ensuring all people, regardless of age, income, or ability, have access to parks, recreational programs, and facilities so that this community is a healthy, smart, and fun place to be. Carolyn Burke will then talk about a project to create a new vision for the Parks and Recreation System, one that will build on the legacy of the past, make right past inequities in the system, and reveal a path forward for how Parks and Recreation can continue to enhance the quality of life for all Eugenians well into the next generation. Now, you're going to hear the words Parks and Recreation System a lot, and some of you may wonder just what that is. So, for the sake of clarity, what we mean by this is the entirety of our public parks, natural areas, trails, recreation buildings, and programs, looked at all together, interacting as a whole, and creating both an infrastructure of park spaces as well as an interdependent set of community relationships. And I can't emphasize the word relationships enough. It's truly the human relationships that create this system and make it work so that all people can use and benefit from it. And now I'd like you to just take a moment and think of a park or recreation facility you've used over the years. What do you value about these places? For me, it was when I came to Eugene in 1990 as a U of O student, hiking the Butte, biking along the riverfront. I was truly inspired by the nature I found right here in the city. It was most often through our public parks that I was able to experience and enjoy that nature. And each of you probably has a favorite park or path, swimming pool, or other rec facility you've used. These places and the experiences offered by our Parks and Recreation System may have even been what brought you to Eugene or has kept you here. Eugene has so much to be proud of in our Parks and Recreation System. And this community worked very hard over 100 plus years to build this legacy system. Eugene has a rich history of support for Parks and Recreation dating back to the establishment of Hendricks Park in 1906 and in 1927, when Eugene voters approved a playground fund exclusively dedicated to support recreation for all children in the city. Or in 1937, when the community rallied to preserve Spencer Butte. Then in the 1960s, 7 new community centers were built. And in 1980, when the Ruth Bascom Path, an innovative, interconnected riverfront path system with bridges crossing the Willamette, was built. A few reasons Eugene has this rich parks and recreation history is its inspiring natural setting and people's desire to invest in their community. From the buttes and ridges, rivers and wetlands, to playgrounds, sports fields, swimming pools, and community centers, people here wanted and helped create access to nature and recreational opportunities by building parks and recreation facilities. And today, your Parks and Recreation divisions continue to provide this access. The Parks and Open Space Division manages over 4,300 acres of public lands, including 94 neighborhood and community parks, 87 miles of trails and pathways, 2,500 acres of natural areas, over 100,000 street trees, and the green stormwater facilities you now see along many of our streets. Each year, we see approximately 9 million adult visits to our parks, and that's not including all the children out there. Our Recreation Division is the largest recreation provider in the region, with 750,000 annual users of our programs and 3 million visits to our facilities. We accomplish this by partnering with over 150 organizations to provide both programs and facilities, including partnering with 4J and Bethel School Districts, which provide 19 sports fields and 16 gyms for community use. Our strength is in leveraging these partnerships to add even more value to the services we provide and extending those services further into the community. Eugene Rec has been leading nationally in this manner for decades and demonstrates how public, nonprofit, and private organizations can work together for community good. Our parks and recreation system provides so much to the lives of so many people, and it provides even more to the community as a whole. There are tangible benefits our parks and recreation system provides to community, to Eugene. And just to list a few, parks add economic value. According to a Trust for Public Lands report titled Measuring the Economic Value of a City Park System, people want to live near parks and open spaces and are willing to pay more to do so, on average 15% more. Parks bring people here to visit. Over 3.5 million tourists visit Lane County each year. Many of these people come to Eugene to use our parks, trails, and recreation facilities for outdoor recreation, festivals, and sporting events. These tourists spend money here in our hotels, restaurants, and shops. People and businesses also choose to locate here because of our parks and recreational opportunities. If you look at the best places and livability rankings from groups like Forbes, Outdoor, or Sunset magazines, you see that the top criteria used to rank how attractive a city is to live and work is how good a city's parks and recreation system is. Businesses pay attention to these rankings when making decisions about where to locate. Parks and recreation facilities also enable health and well-being. If there's one indisputable fact about what keeps people healthy, it's exercise, and having places to exercise is very important. A National Recreation Parks Association study shows the more parks and recreation facilities a city has, the more people in that city exercise. Also, this study showed that the closer people live to a park, the more regularly they exercise. Other studies also show simply being in a park can reduce stress and depression and has numerous other health benefits. Parks and recreation facilities also help build a sense of community by providing the public spaces for people to gather, socialize, and be together, get to know their neighbors, learn, and have fun. Our volunteer programs provide people with an opportunity to give back to the community, and every year we have hundreds of people giving thousands of hours of their time to serve in our parks and recreation facilities. Our parks also help clean our local air and water. The vegetation and green spaces help filter stormwater runoff and reduce the impacts of flooding, reduce pollutants like CO2 and particulate matter, reduce energy costs, such as helping keep the city cooler in the summer, and our natural areas are helping to protect local biodiversity. And if that's not enough, your Parks and Recreation divisions are also helping Eugene solve some of its biggest challenges. We're on the front lines of addressing homelessness by mitigating the environmental impacts from camping on public lands and supporting programs like the Eugene Mission's Life Change Program, which provides opportunities for people who are homeless to participate in a service learning experience within our parks and facilities. We also support Opportunity Village, a micro housing project for the homeless, which exists on city land within our operations yard. We're improving public safety through collaborative programs like Park Watch and Park Ambassadors, where we coordinate with the Eugene Police Department to help keep parks safe. Our rec programs provide enriching opportunities to everyone, ensuring access and equity across all economic, cultural, and ability groups. We provide 1,500 recreation program scholarships annually to help people pay for activities. We serve over 100 seniors daily at our Campbell Community Center with an affordable lunch and social activities. Our family and youth services programs partner with other agencies to help Eugenians participate in all sorts of activities. Partners like Kids Sports and the Boys and Girls Club, whose organizations help kids learn through play and being healthy. We're also helping support local education through things like our after-school programs at 4J and Bethel Schools and our outdoor programs, where kids learn better through nature. These are just a few of the ways Parks and Recreation is working each day to support a larger vision for Eugene, a vision of economic, social, and environmental prosperity. Our contribution toward this end is to maintain the parks and recreation facilities we have now and inspire a future for the parks and recreation system that the entire community will benefit from for decades to come. Now, our divisions do face their own set of challenges in getting there. Most of the recreation facilities we have today were built in the Eugene of the 1960s and are too few, too small, and too outdated to adequately provide for Eugene in 2017. As well, for almost a decade, the annual cost to operate and maintain parks has risen, while general fund revenues for parks have fallen or been flat. This has diminished our ability to operate and maintain parks in a clean, green, and safe way, and the trend has been that overall park assets are deteriorating at an accelerating pace, which has contributed to park spaces that are not as usable for recreation, and some appear shabby. Also, Eugene hasn't stopped growing. More people are coming to live here and will want to have access to parks and recreation services. And in 2021, the world will be at our doorstep with the World Track and Field Championships. Tens of thousands of athletes, media, tourists will be using our city, and billions of viewers around the world will watch these games each day and want to see more of Eugene. So it was with this in mind that almost 4 years ago, we began to discuss how best to address these challenges the system faces. We recognized the need to re-engage the community and create a new vision. Our formal planning process was started about 2 years ago as a way to do just that. The Parks and Recreation System Plan is both a community engagement and visioning process that will guide planning and development for the next 10 years. This plan addresses community needs for new parks and facilities, addresses the need to renovate existing parks and recreation assets, and identifies the means to fund the ongoing maintenance to support those public assets. And now, Carolyn Burke is going to share with you more about this project and the strategic steps we can take together to help build a better parks and recreation system for the future generations.
Hi there. It's great to be here at City Club and to help get the word out about this planning effort, about planning for the future of parks and recreation in Eugene. So there are three goals that we're trying to accomplish with this planning effort. The first is to address current challenges that we face in the system. The second is to proactively plan for the future, recognizing we're a growing city and a more densified city. And third, to create an exciting vision for the future, to leave a legacy for the next generation. So the finalized plan will be adopted by the City Council, hopefully around mid-2017, and it will have both a long-range vision, and then it will also have an implementation plan for the next 10 years. It was also a goal of ours from the very beginning of this project to do a really thorough job of engaging the community. After all, these places belong to all of us. To date, our community outreach efforts have connected with over 10,000 community members, and we've done this through a combination of traditional methods, such as neighborhood meetings and workshops and surveys, but we've also added a few new tools to our toolbox, some innovative tools that are really focused on going out to where people are instead of always asking them to come to us. So I'm going to share a couple examples. The first is that we did recently acquire a little red Volkswagen bus-inspired trailer, which we bring around to different parks and community events and parking lots around town. And we engage people with this through fun items such as pedal-powered music, free ice cream donated by So Delicious, and knowledgeable staff people where we can just have good one-on-one conversations. So we did 40 of these pop-up events in the last 2 years. We think we reached about 4,000 people that way that otherwise would not have participated in this process. Another thing that we did is we mailed a newsletter out to every single household in Eugene. So this was last July. You all should have received it because it went to 83,000 households. And it had in it an explanation about the project. It had a draft vision for the future. And then it asked people for their feedback. So we had an online survey that accompanied it where people could go and give their direct input into this process. And the last thing I want to mention is that we did a very specialized outreach to members of Eugene's Latino community. We did this because we want to ensure that our parks and our recreation facilities are safe and welcoming and inclusive. So we did a great partnership with the City of Eugene Office of Human Rights and Neighborhood Involvement. the University of Oregon, and local Latino businesses and organizations, and we reached out to hundreds of community members, and we have very tangible recommendations as a result that are already being implemented today, including bilingual signage and information throughout the system. So all of this engagement has resulted in a vision for the future. We believe that it really does reflect the values and the principles of this community, and it is a bold and exciting vision that ensures Eugene's legacy as a city that loves and excels in parks and recreation. For starters, it includes making parks safer. This is a foundational issue. We have heard it loud and clear that it is a concern of the community and it is a concern of ours, and we work on this issue every single day and will continue to. Next is to repair those facilities that are in poor condition and to maximize their value to the community. This means renovating and expanding community centers and pools and replacing our dilapidated park infrastructure. A terrific example of what happens when we do reinvest in these facilities can be seen at Amazon Pool. In the early 2000s, we did upgrade that facility, and in response, we saw a 174% increase in attendance. And that has not dropped off. Next is building new parks, community centers, and pools in areas of town that are currently underserved. There is a very strong value of equity and fairness in this community, and people want to see those neighborhoods have facilities. You may not know that we have not constructed a new neighborhood park in about 7 years. This, despite 17 undeveloped park sites that we currently own that are in underserved areas, but we haven't been able to develop them because we don't have the funding to maintain them once they're developed. Next is adding more trails, paths, and neighborhood connections. Really, the number one project in our survey information, aside from additional restrooms, is biking and walking improvements. This is something, it's the most common form of recreation. And it's not necessarily always done in a park. So in addition to increasing the number of paths and trails we have in our parks, we're also working with our partners in Public Works Transportation to ensure that we can get to parks safely and that the entire community is walkable. And finally, better access to the Willamette River. It is one of our greatest assets here in Eugene. We have a beautiful park system that borders it, and we have paths that run along it for miles. Yet getting into the river for swimming or kayaking or fishing or just to cool your toes is very difficult. So improving our relationship to the river by providing safe and enjoyable ways to interact with it is an important part of this vision. So these are concepts at a high level, but I assure you there is a detailed project list with 250 projects that back up those concepts at around a cost of about $300 million or so. Yes, this is a long-term vision, nothing we will accomplish in the next 10 or 20 years, which is why the next step in this process is so important. This next step is identifying what piece of this vision do we carve out in the next 10 years to accomplish, and how will we pay for it? We will be having this conversation with the City Council over the next several months, and we invite all of you to follow along and express your own views. If you would like more information, please visit our website at hugeparksandrec.org. That's E-U-G, parksandrec.org, and sign up for our e-newsletter. We'll keep you informed of the process and how you can be involved. So, I have just spent several minutes talking to you about facilities and projects and priorities. But it's important to remember that parks and recreation is really about people. It's about the people who use these places to connect with one another, to relax, to restore, to improve themselves, and to improve their community. So there's no better person I know of to tell you that story than Sandy Schaefer.
Thanks, Carolyn. And thank you for having us here this afternoon. To me, one of the things I am most proud of in the work we do is the way our staff compassionately and professionally interacts with the public. Usually people come to us to have a good time or learn a new skill or share an experience, but there are times too that they come to us when they have a specific issue or a problem that they need help with. One such program that helps people is our Teen Court program. Teen Court operates out of Peterson Barn Community Center. This program is very effective in that it assists juvenile offenders who face a jury of their peers to receive a consequence for the crimes they've committed. It has an 80% effectiveness rating, preventing youth from reoffending and doing bad things later in life in a way that will hamper their growth and development. We also collaborate with the City of Eugene Police Department, Lane County Youth Services, and other partners. I think our stories are usually best told by our patrons, so I'd like to take just a quick moment and read a letter that was written to our teen court supervisor from the parent of a young man who went through the program. When you called, it was a time when my son had lost his friends and felt alone and scared. I was at a total loss as to where to turn and what to do. Through teen court, you gave us an opportunity. You gave my son a purpose and a way to figure out how to turn his bad choice into a positive learning experience instead of just giving up on himself. You also gave me a positive direction to turn to and made me more aware of how to communicate with my teenager. You allowed us a place to work together and get through these times with no shame. Thank you for having a program that doesn't give up on kids, but shows them that a mistake doesn't have to be something that defines them for the rest of their lives. A program that teaches them that how you deal with problems shows them what kind of person they can become. Thank you for coming into our lives when we needed you most, and for doing what you do every day to help our family and so many others. Today, I feel like we can move forward in a much more positive, healthy, and happy way. We have many more stories like this, and if we had a campfire and some marshmallows, I would sit there and tell you many, many more. But I just want to thank you for the opportunity to express our gratitude and all the support that you provide, and please feel free to send us your stories. We'd love to hear them. Thank you very much.
Okay, so let's bring our first question. If you can get the panelists to have a seat on the special chair, and our first questioner will be directing his question to all of you. So I'll give you about 10 seconds to sit. 10, 9, 8, I'm just kidding. So if our first questioner is ready, go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here today to ask this first question. This is an important issue. My name is Brad Van Apple. I'm the director of Mount Pisgah Arboretum. The Arboretum is a nonprofit that has served our community for 44 years. Thanks to a partnership with Lane County, we manage a 209-acre facility within the county's largest park. At the Arboretum, we engage people with nature through education and stewardship, because as the climate changes and human populations grow, getting people learning about and caring for the natural world is our best hope for the future of our planet and our community. Like most parks, city parks included, the Arboretum struggles to secure adequate funding. Our strategy is different from the city's. The Arboretum's budget is based mostly on donations rather than tax revenues. But when it comes down to it, we're all depending on community support for the services we provide. That means getting more people to appreciate our parks. But more visitors results in more maintenance costs and more impact in natural areas. Eugene is blessed with some beautiful parks. As the city grows and changes, and as both the natural climate and the national political climate shift, how do you see Eugene continuing to secure and grow the public support and community involvement needed to sustain our parks and natural areas without loving them to death?
So I'm Craig Smith, the Recreation Services Director. And for me, I guess the initial response to that answer involves our youth and our youth and families. I think when you talk about the value of our natural world, that I think maybe so in the last couple generations, we've lost touch with our natural world as parents who teach their children about that. And that I know in both our parks programs and what we do in recreation is that we involve youth and we teach them about the outdoors and we teach them the value of outdoors. And therefore, they become stewards of our future. They become the ones that are aware of how important a wetland is, how important the river is, how important many things are, the animals in our parks, and so they carry that forward as stewards. So, and that would have to come from, of course, their parents promoting that.
Hi, this is Carolyn Burt. I would just add to that we really have to have a multi-pronged approach. And we do have to some extent, rely on community members who are willing to give their time and volunteer. In FY16, community members and adoption groups contributed 15,000 hours of service. And that is valued at a cost of $365,000. So if we keep doing that every single year and building on that, we not only get needed resources for the system, but we are getting ownership of that system too. When somebody volunteers in a place, they feel connected to that place and they want to see it thrive. So I think finding more ways to connect, and as Craig said, with our youth in particular, is a good place to start.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a break for a few minutes.
This is KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. We're on Facebook and Twitter and online at klcc.org.
So welcome back to the program. Hey, let's go ahead and get started with our questions. So all members are going to come to the microphone. We're going to ask you to formulate your questions in 30 seconds or less. And I am going to be the bad guy saying, ask your question. And we're reducing now people's statements so that we have more people asking questions. And to model that, it's going to be our very own board member, John Belcher.
Thank you, Juan Carlos. There are several communities in this state that have excellent parks programs, and the reason they do is because they have special districts that have their own taxing authority and leadership to make sure that they have the funding they need. And we know that we can't afford to maintain the parks we have, let alone add more to the system. So I'd like to get your feedback on why Eugene shouldn't have a parks district separate, just as Tualatin Hills, Bend, and Springfield have. Thank you.
Is that all the panel? Okay.
I'll start with that.
Could you introduce yourself to the radio? Yes,
again, I'm Craig Smith. I'm the Recreation Services Director for the City of Eugene. And there's kind of a long version of that and a short version. I'll start with the longer one. So I became employed by the City of Eugene Recreation Division in 2001. And at that time, this conversation about becoming a park district and changing our governance was brought up. It was brought up because of the rough 90s that occurred in the state with Measure 50 and then later Measure 47 and whatnot. So we vetted this question over the last 15 years in many different ways. And what we found, it's a very complicated adjustment right away. We know that there has not been any cities in Oregon that have been able to change their model of governance from a city municipality to a special district since Measure 50 was passed in 1990. All those that you mentioned were all had become a special district prior to that time. So it's a complicated answer to shift into that, and it's a big step to change your governance into that. So that's part of it right there. And then the other bit is look at the reasons why. And you say some of the reasons why, and what we've heard on the plus and minus side, is that you get more stable funding when you have a district. Well, essentially with Measure 50, the taxes for both, whether you're a special district or a municipality, they come from our property taxes, right? And what Measure 50 does, it puts a cap on that property tax. So whether we're drawing it for a district or for a municipality, we're still drawing from the same fund, and there's a cap on that still. So that's the challenging part of that. The other bit, personally, in the sense of working within a municipality and not a district, is, and coming in from 2001 and finishing up right now at the end of our Great Recession, is the fact that I think our method of surviving some financial challenges through this Great Recession reflected a lot of good work that our Parks and Recreation divisions did while working with the entire city, absorbing the challenges, the budgetary challenges of the recession. I thought we did a very favorable job in spreading out those hits to each department, and that includes the police, fire, public works, central services, and things like that. And so I know that that's been a shift. We didn't, being Parks and Recreation, weren't put in a bucket list that was lower than anybody else. We were recognized as a service area that was leading to the quality of life of Eugene residents. So, and then with that, another component of that, on a personal level, being an employee of a municipality, is I find it desirable, highly desirable, to work within a structure where everybody's on the same page. So I'm, instead of competing with police and fire and competing with others, I'm actually working closer with them, being part of a city governance model this way. So from that perspective, that would be the longer answer. And so we haven't really, we continue to vet that question. The short answer is we haven't really pushed it into one of the options that we're looking at for this current systems plan that we just described. So,
okay, and Greg, you have something to add?
Craig Carnegie, Parks and Open Space Director. Short answer, a special district is not a magic bullet to solve our revenue issues. It's a model of governance, not a revenue source. Their revenue base comes from the same base as the municipal governments, which i.e. property tax. The advantage that a special district does have is that their funds that do come in, flow in, are dedicated specifically for Parks and Rec, and that's a nice thing to have, especially if you're Parks and Recreation fan like we are. However, there are advantages to being in a municipal government as well, as Craig alluded to, just being nested within that larger scale of an organization and being able to rely on other resources like within our Public Works Department, our City Engineering Division, our Library and Cultural Services Divisions. All of that actually provides an ability for us to leverage the resources that we do have throughout the city and actually provide a higher value of service, in my opinion. For the delivery of Parks and Recreation services.
Next question.
I'm Robin Fletcher, and the question is, how much reciprocity is there between Eugene Parks and the county parks? And is it working? If there is, what is it? And is it working? And is it beneficial to both agencies?
Okay, Greg, go for it.
Craig Carnegie, Parks and Open Space Director. We actually coordinate and work quite a bit with Lane County. We're in communication with them regularly. In fact, we recently negotiated a purchase of some property that will help us with our Ridgeline Trail system. We're both members of the Rivers to Ridges Partnership, which is a very visionary group of agencies throughout the region trying to protect our open spaces and biodiversity as well as enhance our trail systems. So I would say that via communication, we work very closely with Lane County and consider them to be one of our close partners.
Sandy, want to add?
Sandy Schaefer, Recreation Services. One of the ways we partner with Lane County Parks actually occurs out at Fern Ridge Lake, as well as up at Mount Pisgah. At Fern Ridge Lake, we have a very robust sailing program, both a junior sailing program for young people and then also an adult sailing program where we get a variety of different groups out on the water. Lane County Parks has been an amazing partner, very collaborative, very open to helping us store boats when we need boats stored. There is a lot of reciprocity. We essentially have established relationships with the leadership so that we can really negotiate how to help each other. That's what it's all about. And then over at Mount Pisgah, we take a lot of youth groups to Mount Pisgah for outdoor environmental education trips. We also have folks hiking that we take out for interpretive hiking tours, and we're in contact also with the volunteer coordinator during the Mushroom Festival. So we have a lot of different opportunities specific to those two parks where we enjoy a really strong partnership. Thank you.
Okay, next question.
All right, James Baldock, City Club member since 2012. You mentioned that there was a list of like 270 projects. I wanted to know from each of you, which one is personally the most exciting project to you, why, and how much you think it costs?
All right. Everybody jump at once. Carolyn, you want to go first? Go ahead.
Hi, Carolyn Burke, Parks and Open Space Planning Manager. Because I've been so close to this list for so long, I figured I'd jump in first. But for me, it is definitely reconnecting with the Willamette River. I think that it is such an untapped amenity within this town. Yes, we all love it. We see it. We bike along it. And we love it when we see some kids floating down in inner tubes or a drift boat or somebody hiking, or excuse me, not hiking, but fishing. But, you know, I don't think we take full advantage of it. I just think that we need to really understand what our relationship should be. We need to provide access to that place so that people can safely get down there and put their toes in the water, or maybe throw an inner tube, as long as you're wearing a life jacket, and really enjoy the river. It's an amazing amenity. I think it is untapped, and I'm excited about it. What's it gonna cost? Well, I think we can do it in phases. I think that we need to think of it as a whole, like, okay, where's a good place for swimming, a good safe place for swimming? Where's a good boat launch? And a good place to take out. We have a couple of those, but we need more. So we need to think of it as a system, but then I think we can make some targeted improvements. Alton Baker Park is a great place to start, actually. There's already kind of a natural beach there where we could invest, $1 million. I'm looking at one of my landscape architects. I'm not sure how much it would cost, probably more than we might think it would. It depends how much in-water work would be needed, but there could be so much value for that investment.
Sandy, any other Craigs? Any favorite ones?
Sure. Go ahead. I'll jump in. I love the river, and I love all the 348 different projects on there. But the short question is, historically, what I want most may not occur because it's the greatest challenge. And that is I'm passionate about the river, but I'm probably most frustrated by the fact that there's parts of Eugene that simply don't have our services as equal within them. And that would be the Santa Clara area and the Southwest Eugene area when it comes to recreation services, which mean a community center or a pool in that area. Those are big ticket items. They start about $25 million for a multiplex, right? That's a big chunk. So it's hard to get that chunk. Usually when I hear somebody talk about phases, it's usually because as a whole it's too big to swallow. So maybe there is a phase with that type of a project anyway. But for me, a big thing is about equity and access, and that's one of the things that reflect that.
Sandy, you looked at me like you want to go for it. Go for it.
Favorite project, Sandy Schaefer. I one of my favorite projects on the list actually is Campbell Senior Center. And I would say the reason is because older folks are one of our most vital assets, and we have more and more people moving to Eugene to retire. And although Campbell Center is a beautiful facility, it's too small. And it's in a prime location, again, by the river. So if there was a way for us to accommodate more folks 55-plus and add square footage, that would really enable us to serve a broader, more diverse group of our elders.
Craig?
Go ahead. Craig Carnegie. The Willamette River is an unbelievable, untapped asset, but since Carolyn and Craig already took that one, I'm going to add neighborhood parks in the north part of town and the west part of town, extending up towards River Road through Santa Clara area, Willa-Kinzie. I go through that area and I see multiple public park properties that we own, that I know that we've owned for a decade or more, that have gone undeveloped because we don't have the O&M to build those parks. We have the capital, but we don't have the O&M to actually sustain the maintenance on those. And I know there were families that built homes adjacent to those properties, anticipating a park to come in and be built there, and children, you know, wanting to have that value and that experience that haven't really had that benefit. And I would love to see more neighborhood parks, a community park, go in on that side of town. The range for a neighborhood park kind of depends on what the neighbors and community actually wants. We have on one side kind of a minimalist, low impact approach, a simple park for a few acres, a couple hundred thousand dollars, up to, you know, full infrastructure with the latest, greatest playground equipment for, you know, 4 or 5 acres. It could be potentially up to $1 million. So it kind of depends on what the neighbors want, but it's certainly scalable.
Thank you. Next question.
Hi, Ralph Pledger, member for about 3 months. Question from a guest. What methods could you propose to better fund maintenance?
All right.
Craig Carnegie. Yes. So there's a plethora of methods that have been researched by ourselves as well as a nonprofit organization named the Trust for Public Lands. They range all over the board from tax-based to earned revenue, such as charging or pay-to-play, donations from private partnerships and such. What it really comes down to for us is that some sort of an operating levy or possibly a utility fee, which is actually implemented in a number of different municipalities across the state, such as Medford, to help augment or supplement operations and maintenance for parks, seem to be the most doable right now. But there's a broad range of potentials that are out there that we have looked at.
Anybody else? Or ready for the next question? Ready? Okay, next question.
My name is Ross Stein. Early on, somebody mentioned safety in the parks and the concern that is, and then in our discussion, it came up about the unhoused who are using the parks, and sometimes you're spending quite a bit of money for cleanup in that area. And so, you know, how are you able to work with other agencies? Obviously, these people need housing, and they go to the parks because they get some kind of shelter. So can you just address that whole issue of the unhoused in the parks?
Okay, Craig, go for it.
Craig Carnegie. I guess I would first separate the issue of homeless and safety. They don't necessarily go hand in hand. I mean, there are homeless issues where that create cleanup needs in our parks and actually do threaten some of our natural resources and pollute some of our waterways. That's somewhat of a separate issue from some of the illicit criminal activities that we see going on in some of our closer in urban core parks. So as far as addressing the issues around homelessness, we do work with a number of other agencies like CAHOOTS and obviously our police department as well to try to navigate and have a compassionate approach, but also an understanding that, you know, we do need to protect some of these resources that we have in our parks, and being long waterways and such and polluting those is just not something that we can tolerate. However, working with groups like Opportunity Village Eugene, as I mentioned, and Eugene's Missions Life Change programs, I feel like we've taken a positive route as well, and it's not just about mitigating impacts, but it's actually trying to help people get a step up and find another place to be.
On safety, anybody else? Okay, Sandy?
I would say from a preventative standpoint, what recreation really focuses a lot of attention on is with our young people is helping create stronger families, stronger individuals at a very young age so that they develop resiliency and they develop values and belief systems that will enable them to be successful later in life. So although it doesn't directly speak to specifically that issue, it does speak to our desire, our effort, and our overarching goal, which is to help young people right at the very onset of life have the resources and support that they need to be healthy, successful, contributing members of the community. And so we feel the more we invest at that point in time, the less likely they will be to have issues later in life.
Thank you. Next question.
Mary Layton, City Club member since 2006. And this follows up on Roz's question. We were at the same table. One of our table mates asked, well, what percentage of park funds are used for maintenance issues related to its ancillary use as housing? Because this could be collateral damage. Our failures in housing programs could be, in fact, occupying dollars that we intended to spend on parks and recreation. But it turned out none of us actually knew if that was just a bad rumor or if there was really significant resources being allocated from parks and rec budgets to clean up the mess created by our failure in another area.
Is Craig Smith taking this one or the other Craig? Okay.
Craig Carnegie. Approximately $250,000 has been the thumbnail that we've used that we expend each year to clean up homeless camps in our parks. We actually know that amount is a little bit higher because our staff touches this issue every single day in a number of different ways. We're constantly discussing and strategizing and tracking, and we've got folks in our finances section as well as other managements that are working on this issue. But in terms of our actual real time in the field dealing with homeless camp cleanup, we're using around $250,000 annually to mitigate the impacts from these camps.
Anybody else?
Jerry Diethelm, City Club member. And I wanted to compliment the people here. And I remember when I got my newsletter this summer, it was really beautifully done, the watercolors by Liska Chan to help us imagine, you know, what our park and recreation system could be like. I mean, and I agree that there are equity problems and things and maintenance problems and other things that have to take priority and we need more money. But I wanted to add one more thing. This has come up since I think the newsletter came out. We're going to invest $1 billion north of Franklin Boulevard on the campus there, and it's going to give us a chance, perhaps our only chance, to develop our Millrace. And I'm just wondering what kind of response parks planning and what kind of relationships you might be planning to have in order to take advantage of this big investment that may, in the long run, help us restore our Millrace.
Okay, who wants to go first? Carolyn, looks like you're ready to go. Go for it.
Hi, Carolyn Burke. It's not something that we have had a lot of recent conversations about. Obviously, it has been an ongoing conversation in the community for a long time and was recently brought up by University Planning, I believe, that it could be a component of the renovation and the revitalization of that part of campus. So I look forward to having more of those conversations with the university in the future. I think that we have a lot of projects on our list. As I said, 250 of them, and it's not currently on the list. And I'd have to think. And of course, the City of Eugene Parks does not have jurisdiction over much of that I'm aware of.
Some of it is the University of Oregon, some of it is city, some of it is private, I believe. So we'd sure want to take a look at that. And of course, there is an opportunity. We are looking at redeveloping a portion of the E-Web property into riverfront parkland. There is an outfall from the mill race at that property, and maybe that is an intervention point, for instance, where we are able to explore getting people to the river and think about how to kind of celebrate, I guess I would say, the re-entry of the mill race into the river. That's one idea. But there's more to come, I'm sure, on that, Jerry.
Dan
right,
Bryant.
Last question.
Yeah, Dan Bryant, City Club member. So I want to follow up on the homelessness question, and thank you very much, Craig, for your answers, and particularly separating the issue of homelessness and crime, because the homeless are way more often victims of crime than they are perpetrators. So I just want to plant this seed, see your response to it. Can we not get a twofer or even a threefer? There are a couple of great examples. Bakersfield, California, pays over $1 million to the Bakersfield Homelessness Center to employ the homeless in their program to pick up trash along the highways. Albuquerque has started a new program where they're actually picking up panhandlers and giving them jobs at $9 an hour to do similar kinds of work. So obviously you provide meaningful income to people who need it, you provide a meaningful service, and if you do it right, you can even lower costs without taking away any, you know, good union wage jobs. So that's the question. Would a program like that work here in this community? Any thoughts about how we might implement such to shift some of those resources to provide that income to people who can use it, lower our own costs, improve the community in the process?
Okay, start with Craig.
Craig Carnegie, that sounds like a great idea, Dan, and I would love to chat with you more about how we could implement that. I've heard numerous case studies across the nation, as you mentioned, of where that has worked. I know Arizona State Parks, I believe, they've employed homeless veterans in their parks, so it can work. The question about logistics I can't answer in this answer, but I would love to have those conversations and see how that could be developed.
Are any other panelists? My name is Juan Carlos Valle, and this concludes today's program. Thank you so much.